You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. In your backyard. And worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumour.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes. What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes.
Yeah, minutes. It's not an XG, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio, the show that demystifies all those gadgets you come across in your daily life. I'm Andrew McComb. Have you ever wondered about the digital trail that you leave behind in your day-to-day travels? Have you ever used the internet banking to see where your partner is currently spending your hard-earned cash? Maybe not. But every time you make a telephone call on your home or mobile phone, do a financial transaction of any kind, or even browse the internet, then chances are there'll be some digital crumb left behind which can be used to identify you if someone needs to. Last week, several people arrested in connection with the British terror attacks were traced after mobile telephones found intact in the failed London car bombs revealed crucial information. Media reports said, as soon as police recovered the phones from the two Mercedes cars, officers went to work on the SIM cards, gathering a wealth of intelligence from the numbers stored. Within 24 hours, anti-terrorist police were heading off to Glasgow, searching for members of the terrorist cell and warning the largest shopping centre in the area to increase security in its car parks. In Australia, Telstra records the details of every call that passes through their network. They don't record the conversation, only the originating number, the destination number, and the time of the call. This information is kept for quite some time and is available to law enforcement agencies should it be required. It's also possible to trace internet users via their IP address, although this requires the cooperation of local ISPs. Dealing with large overseas ISPs just isn't quite so easy. So next time you're up to no good, leave the modcons out of arm's reach.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Gadgets to widen energy drain. 1 terabyte optical discs now on the horizon. Top broadband ISPs deny peer-to-peer shaping. The IIA push on cable net choke and albums yield to digital push. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Google loses Gmail in Germany. ISP scramble to tackle net choke, iPhone battery prompts an outrage, and easier digital TV recording is on the way. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Microsoft said it expects to spend more than $1 billion to repair widespread hardware problems in its Xbox 360 video game console after a large number of them have broken down. In a statement, the software giant said it would extend the warranty of the Xbox 360 to 3 years, after too many of the consoles succumbed to a general hardware failure. But the company provided few other details about the extent of the problems. Robbie Bach, president of Microsoft's Entertainment and Devices division, said that in the past few months, Microsoft has been having to make Xbox 360 console repairs at a rate too high for the company's liking. Mr. Bach said that the company made some manufacturing and production changes that he expects will reduce the Xbox 360 hardware lockups, but he declined to identify the problems or say which others might remain. Microsoft said it would record a charge of up to $1.15 billion for the fourth quarter to cover the additional costs associated with the warranty extension. A young German entrepreneur has won a legal battle against the internet giant Google on the use of its Gmail brand for free electronic mail services. The regional court in the northern city of Hamburg ruled that Google may not use the name in Germany, upholding 33-year-old businessman David Grescher's claim to have a copyright on the name for an email service he's been developing for 7 years. Mr. Gresh said that he used the name Gmail since 2000, 4 years before the US giant launched its Gmail product. Mr. Gersh's lawyer said that Google had subjected their client to a costly 3-year legal marathon that is still ongoing because the company has suits pending against him in Spain, Portugal, and Switzerland. Australia's key internet companies have responded rapidly to a call by the industry's peak body to ease costs for international network capacity. Earlier this week, the Internet Industry Association announced plans to establish a task force as part of an effort to persuade the federal government to control charges for links feeding overseas internet services to local broadband users. IIA Chairman Peter Corona said that 5 senior executives from the telecommunications and internet sector had already agreed to participate in the task force. However, he declined to reveal whether Optus and Telstra had agreed to participate. A consumer advocacy group has expressed outrage over Apple's battery replacement program for the iPhone, while developers and hackers are trying to figure out ways they could expand the capabilities of the hottest new gadget in town. The hybrid mobile phone, iPod media player, and wireless web browsing device launched much fanfare around a week ago. On the same day, the Federation for Consumer and Taxpayers' Rights fired off a letter to Apple and AT&T, the mobile phone's exclusive carrier, complaining that customers were being left in the dark about the procedure and cost of replacing the gadget's battery. The iPhone battery is soldered inside the device and cannot be swapped out by the owner, like most other mobile phone devices. Apple spokeswoman Jennifer Hake said on Thursday the company posted the battery replacement details on its website last Friday, after the product went on sale. The iPhone is literally running out of the door of the Apple shops in and around the United States. AT&T, the phone's exclusive carrier, has certainly had its problems, with some customers not being able to authenticate their phone for at least 48 hours.
Initially, from what I understand, there were some problems in terms of AT&T actually processing payments. This occurred kind of Friday evening, and it definitely slowed things down.
The digital TV take-up looks set to rise following a commercial television industry's decision to launch a free electronic program guide, otherwise known as an EPG, covering all free-to-air channels within 3 months. The service will enable consumers to automate recording of TV shows on all free-to-air networks using digital recording platforms and making it easier for people to watch shows when it suits them. 9 and 10, as well as regional players such as Prime and Win, have backed 7's TiVo digital video recording platform, which will have access to the EPG. But Foxtel will not get access. Subscribers to its IQ DVR will need to use a free-to-air approved service to record 7 and 10 programs, which are unavailable on Foxtel's digital platform. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Microsoft has introduced 2 new online services to its Windows lineup, saying it plans to release more web offerings later on. So, Dr. Ron, do you reckon a TiVo is going to be for you?
I'm going to say no, it's not for me.
The TiVo in itself has the ability to automatically skip commercial breaks.
Almost surprised there's not software written for Media Center that would do the same thing.
I need help here, boys.
Listen up, LG, Pioneer, everybody
all
else.
Majors,
all
yeah.
The majors, yeah, get with it. We want web servers and Ethernet ports.
iPhone.
iFlop.
iPhone.
Yeah. No.
Telstra rivals are going to get a rent reduction. How about this?
They do nothing to... No, well, this is what I'm paid the big bucks
exactly.
for.
Exactly.
You could put a G-code in that came out of the magazine and it would actually have all the details of which channel, which time it came on. And
I've always valued John McEnroe's opinion of telephone networks prior to picking a handset.
It's good coming from you.
Look, you won't know yourselves with digital television. The picture will just drop out altogether. No, it'll be really good.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio for yet another week. Hope your tech week has been better than mine. I'm Andrew McComb. On the panel this evening, Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan. Good evening to you both.
Andrew, how are you this week?
Oh, don't ask. Don't ask. Have you ever been driving down the freeway and all of a sudden all the lights on the dashboard of your car come on? That sums up my drive home tonight.
So the automotive technology let you down.
Oh, look, yes. I've come to the conclusion that the manufacturer who makes the vehicle that I drive, and it's a four-wheel drive-y sort of arrangement, has come to the conclusion that when they can't quite diagnose the problem, turn everything on. And that's exactly what happened on the way home.
Guaranteed to get your attention anyway.
It was, and it did. It said, you have no brakes, you have no battery. In fact, you have nothing. And I've gone, oh, this could be a problem.
Was 100 kilometres now. Running at this point?
Oh, yeah, we're doing 100 Ks down the Eastern Freeway here in Melbourne, doing that at this point in time. I've gone, oh, this can't be good. Put my foot on the brake, first thing. Yeah. They head still brakes. Work. They're good. Headlights, yes, they're still on because it was dark and all that sort of stuff. But the moral of the story is I got home and I debugged it. It was just a 10-amp fuse underneath the dashboard that had stopped the indicator. So I replaced it and the indicator's working and everything went off again. But I just find it frustrating that they tell you that nothing's working. How was your drive home? Hopefully it wasn't as eventful as mine, Graham.
No, fairly uneventful on the way home.
Oh, good. And technology has been uneventful this week for you as well?
Well, the technology immediately before the drive home was connecting up a Windows Vista workstation to a Small Business Server 2003.
Oh, yes, you were talking about that, or a similar incident that the other week where it wasn't quite talking because the patches hadn't come through.
This one, had all the patches and needed to do a couple of unusual things, but, it got Vista all connected up.
And that surprises you for Windows?
Well, no, It was a little bit more difficult than it should have been, but not as difficult as it might have been. So it was somewhere in the middle there.
Can I tell you a funny story today, boys? I was installing a printer. Speaking of installing Vista and stuff like that.
What model printer?
I actually quite like Vista. A Konica thing.
One of the
cheap and nasty porta potties you get from one of the big white stores.
Disposable printer.
Yeah, exactly. When you run out of tone, you chuck it out and get a new one. Yeah. Yep. It was very funny, actually, because the drivers that came with it were not for Vista. They were for XP and 2000.
Oh, yes.
And anyway, I brazenly put the CD into the Vista box and thought, here we go. This is what they all rave about. And I thought, this is all right. And checked all the boxes, went through, click. Yep. Well, okay, it seems to work. Somehow or other, the language is in Swahili.
Oh, no.
And do you think I can get it into English? I'll install that driver and I'll manually install the English driver. No, it's still in Spanish, actually. Not Swahili, but Spanish. So
the effect is the same if you don't speak either.
Well, yeah, Basica or something, for Basic, for the tab on the top of the window. So you can sort of... So my Spanish isn't that flash, but nonetheless.
So where do you see the language used?
If you go into your printer options, like say you're in Word, for example,
right, and
you go print, and then you go properties because you want to turn it from A4 to letter or into landscape.
And there's a custom printer dialog.
Yeah, when it comes up there and it says, "Sí, señor." and from there, and then I apologised to my colleague. I said, "Congratulations, it's in Spanish."
Can I recommend Alta Vista's Babelfish to you?
Yes. So I've got to try and find an English-speaking version for Vista. That's the dilemma. But other than that, my experiences with Vista so far have been good. I did try and put in a network card for wireless broadband into a Vista laptop during the week, and I failed dismally in that, whereas it went in beautifully with XP. So I think we're still seeing the driver issues a little bit.
So nothing wrong with the card. The card's been proven to work in
other
systems.
I even did a firmware upgrade on the card, but that's another story. I won't go there. Don't ever do... This thing flashed like it wouldn't wheelie for half an hour and then came up and said, sorry, I can't do it. And I've gone, uh-oh. Thinking it's tried to...
It's bricked it, yeah.
Yeah, but no, it still works. In fact, you can send me an email through that network card right now at feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
Oh, that's exciting. So, for your new network card.
No, well, yes. It's had a firmware upgrade, I think. I'm not sure, but we'll see what happens with it down the track. So, anyway. Let's move on, shall we? Letters and things like that. Dr. Ron, would you like to start the ball rolling?
Yes, we've had a lot of feedback, haven't we, in the last week?
Feedback, yes. We've had good feedback and bad feedback.
Not so good feedback. But firstly, from Michael, who uses the... alias TARDIS3 on our exclusive forum. On a recent show, you talked about the new release of the Safari browser for Windows.
Oh, yes.
Like you, I downloaded it to have a look, although I'm a Firefox and more recently a Flock user.
Pardon me? A Flock? What's Flock?
Is a web browser, apparently. I don't know. A Flock? Do you know that one, Graham?
Haven't encountered it, no. I've already got about four web browsers.
Hang on, I'll Google it and see what I can find here.
Is four enough for you? I was quite surprised when
Flock?
I used...
Flock, F-L-O-C-K?
Correct. I was quite surprised when I used Safari to access eBay, where I received the following message. To effectively use eBay, you need to use the latest version of your web browser. You are currently using Safari 1.0. You can upgrade to, and there was a graphical Get Firefox link. It would It would appear that eBay does not like Safari. Kind regards, TARDIS 3.
Thanks. I can confirm that I had the same thing happen to me.
Did you really?
I did.
So, here we go. I've just Googled it. It comes up, Flock, the social web browser, based on the open source Mozilla code, but with the capacity to write to the web. So there you go. That's probably why it thought it was Mozilla, because they've started building Flock with the Mozilla, or probably the Firefox code.
Interesting. Let us know if you've used Flock and you've had some success or otherwise.
Yeah, tell us about your Flock if anyone's using it out there. That'd be very interesting.
We had another interesting email message from John, who provided us with his last name, but we won't announce it on air because he hasn't said we can. It says, "Gentlemen, you'll be pleased to know that I have terminated my download of your podcast as of this week. Your program would undoubtedly be one of the most boring podcasts currently available to an obviously limited Australian audience. Your preoccupation with matters Telstra, PC and Mac bagging leaves much to be desired. If I want to know about viruses, I'll catch a cold. Just keep watching the increasing sale of Macs, iPods and iPhones, and who knows, you may have something positive to say for a change. Smiley, smiley, smiley." Well, that was an interesting email.
I send them all through, whether they're good, bad or indifferent. I did actually try to return John's email address. Have you actually, without reading the first bits of the letter, read the domain that he's at?
Well, that's right. On a closer examination, I clicked reply as well. To reply, John, if you still happen to be listening by some error of your podcasting software.
No, you'll be listening for a response. You watch. You'll get one.
The reply address was at bypond.com. .net.au. Now, I actually changed it to... I took a stab in the dark.
Oh, yeah?
Call me adventurous.
You added the G in there,
I put a G in there and created bypondg. No, I didn't, mate. I created bigpond.net.au, but I haven't got a reply. But, John, look, I hope you're still listening, and we take all your criticism and your comments on board. And, yeah.
Look, I don't think we bag too much. I think, if anything, and I don't want to be taken out of context here, but... there's a fair degree of cynicism with a lot of the technology, and especially by people like us who work in technology each and every day. You know, you see something come across your desk, and rather than cheerful optimism, you go, "Oh, what's it going to work with?" As I've just sort of a testament to with the latest Vista that I've been trialing, and you sort of think, we work with it every day. Goodness me, if you're just your average person that's popped into a white goods shop to buy a laptop or a desktop or something, and you're trying to get it all to work, it can be quite daunting at times.
It can, and we sometimes get a bit jaded, don't we? We're bitter and twisted. We've worked in the industry for many
years. Frustration can sink in.
We've worked in the industry for many, many years, but John, don't let that disturb you. If you don't enjoy the podcast, switch off. If you do, then we'd be happy to have you continue
listening. Have a listen to Leo's one. Leo's is good.
Leo Laporte in the US.
Yeah.
Now, Susie, Andrew. We've got another email from Susie, who's a frapper, mapper, pinner, or upper.
She is, and she lives out in the, somewhere out, she did tell me, and it's not on this email, in central Victoria, up near, out that way, west, where they grow the wheat.
Oh, right, in the wheat belt.
Yes, I think so, and obviously she listens to us on the pod. Hi, Susie. You going to read the letter?
I can.
Do you want me to read? Sorry. Should come to the production meeting.
Glad we're all organised.
We did have a production meeting this evening, didn't we?
Strictly rehearsed and finally polished program.
You were talking about updating to Vista. I've been using Vista since it was first released, and I love it. It was not so good an experience when I first installed it. Driver problems, but it's all good now. That's my experience too. It's starting to become all good once you overcome the new look, the new feel, the lack of availability for drivers for older pieces of equipment, and even new ones when you buy them, they don't seem to put a Vista driver on them. Yeah, and I think that's really the bottom line. But the same thing happened with XP too, didn't it? Remember, guys, when we went from 2000 XP? Yeah, we were just in that initial stage of getting going.
Wasn't until a couple of service packs down the track that things started to get nice and stable.
Yes. You said your computer rating was 2. The highest you can get is 5.9 from what I can read. You could be right. I could stand corrected there because Vista, to me, even though I'm a Microsoft person and I have all the disks there, I haven't really done what everyone should do, is load it up and have a play with it yet. So time is of the essence here, I think.
Is it a satisfaction rating thing that Vista gives you, but based on your hardware level?
Well, the satisfaction. Whose satisfaction? The users?
I don't know. I haven't used it.
I think it's a level of the facilities that have been activated in the Vista program.
How many advanced facilities of Vista do you get access to? It's like a score.
I think so.
Your computer's good enough to do 2 out of 5.9.
Yes. Well, that's what... I think that's probably pretty average. I don't know. But our listeners will tell us. Feedback at Tech Talk Radio. Back to Susie. She said, also, you said run is not in the start menu. It is not included, but if you right-click the taskbar property start menu, customize, you can add it.
Yes.
Yeah, it is available there. You just got to look into accessories. You go start and accessories, and it's buried one down in Vista now. Well, that's what I've discovered. So if you're looking for the run in Vista, then you can bring up your all your old favorites.
I think you're thinking the command prompt is buried in there, but the actual run item to do go start run is an optional extra that you can add on.
Start run. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
As opposed to the starting down, the big circle thing instead of the rectangle thing in the bottom left-hand corner.
Yeah, so you can actually go start run and type in an .exe file to run.
Oh, okay. Yes, you're right, actually.
And that's an optional extra. You can turn on, like Susie said, yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Susie, for sending us in that. Dr. Ron, you've got some hellos and frappery pin things?
I do. We've got some forum hellos. The forum's been extremely busy.
When I logged on today, there were 9 people using it at the one time, which I thought was pretty amazing. Considering I'm going to give it a demonstration to the state government tomorrow.
Ah, very good. There's lots of new users and lots of new posts, especially in the help requests area we've had over the last couple of weeks.
I think one of our regulars was a new user tonight, too, from having a quid of a look there. An aviation guru?
Was that Marky Mark that you saw?
Oh, I couldn't know. Yeah, something like that.
Ah, there you go. He's a new user. He's been helping a lot of people in the help requests area. So, g'day, Mark. It's great to see. Hello as well to a new forum user, Russell Harrower, who's from the Queer FM station that's now streaming us out of Perth in Western Australia, which is terrific. G'day, Russell, and welcome to the forum and to all of your new listeners as well out of Perth. And we've got some Frapper hellos. If you go to frapper.com...
What is Frapper for the people that have not frappered us?
Well, this is one of those social networking web 2.0...
It's pin the tail on the donkey, if you ask me.
...websites. You can put a pin on
you
the map.
You stick a pin in the map.
We can see where you are.
And some people have problems with pins. But I think, who was it, Mark, the tech doctor, was in a tree in Paka for a while there, Paka Panyal.
So the idea is he moved his pin. Whereabouts in the world all our listeners are.
Correct.
Yeah.
Andrew Smith.
It's a great idea.
That's it. Andrew Smith from Auckland has updated his photo. Jake Bullets 28 has joined the community and added a photo. Welcome, Jake. Scrubber, potentially our youngest listener, about 8 hours old in the Frapper photo.
Oh.
There's a photo there of a little baby Scrubber.
You've got to start them young.
Yeah, you do, which is really nice. Welcome aboard.
My 5-year-old's better than me in a lot of respects when it comes to computers, so watch out, little... What's his name there? He's going to...
That's it. We've got Jiminico in the Virgin Islands. We've got Susie from Beulah, northwestern Victoria. That's Susie.
Susie, yes.
There you go. Susie from Beulah. She put a pin in the mouth.
That's why I couldn't remember the name of the place, but now you've...
Well, that's the one.
Good, thank you.
Darren Ward from Colo Vale in New South Wales has pinned the map, and Dawn from Devonport. That's Dawn, D-O-R-N.
Welcome to you all.
Welcome to
the Tech Talk Radio community. Yes, I just have a bit of a log on there. There's 2 people on there currently as we speak, but that's what happens at this time of the night. All right. Now, speaking of spare time and people having too much spare time on their hands, there's been just in the Tech Talk Radio offices of late, there's been a bit of a conspiracy going on about a certain podcasting promo.
Which we've been running
for a while. Now,
the infamous Charlie Pressy.
That's the one, the Charlie Pressy one. Now,
what is Charlie pressing,
well,
Andrew?
Well, I should ask you, because you're the main person behind this promo, which I'm about to play to our listeners.
This is a real promo, but you thought it was
No, we'll slot it in, but I just thought when I heard it for the first time, I said, these guys have got too much spare time on their hands and they're making promos.
This is like the world premiere, is it?
The world premiere of Dr. Ron and Adam Turner and Adam Turner's little...
Son.
Do you recall his name?
I can't remember.
No. Yeah, okay, I'm sure he'll send us
an email. He's making his radio debut, though.
Okay, so, yes.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy, it's Charlie... It's child's play. Oh, it's child's play.
Podcasting is so easy, even my little sister Emily can do it.
Step 1. Download and install some podcatching software like iPodder, Thunderbird or iTunes. Step 2. Find the address of the Tech Talk Radio podcast feed on the Tech Talk Radio website. Step 3. Copy and paste the feed address into your podcatching software. And you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn on a train.
But car is Charlie Pressy.
Well done, boys. Well done.
It's a bit of fun.
Well done.
Yeah.
So there's the new Tech Talk Radio podcasting thing. So, yeah, if you feel free to pop onto the website and download it and pod us. Because we do. You get the extended mix on the podcast.
Yep.
So
podcasting is child's play.
Yes, it caused a whole heap of very interesting discussion not so long back. Is that what spurred you on to do it?
It was, yeah. People emailing us saying, what the hell is that little kid say at the end of the podcasting promo?
Anyway. Let's move on, shall we? Gadgets to widen energy drain. As what we were discussing last week about my wife, who's got a fixation at the moment for turning off anything that glows in the house in an effort to be carbon neutral, which, in the whole, is a very good idea. Just, I have a problem when there's things like, range hoods, as I was discussing last week. I have a problem. I can't communicate to her to say, it hasn't got a remote control, so therefore it doesn't consume power. You know, no clocks in it or anything like that. So I'm finding it a bit frustrating when I go to turn the, do the cooking in the morning and you have to find the power point in the cupboard for the range hood.
Behind the stove somewhere.
But this is the dilemma, modern day carbon dilemma. Flat screen televisions, computers and other high-tech gadgets will use nearly half of a typical British household's total electricity by 2020. Now, those plasma things, boy, how's your meter box, Dr. Ron? You got a LCD thing.
Does it
turn into a helicopter in the meter box when you turn it on?
I haven't noticed. I should have a look, I guess.
And a new report by Energy Conservation Body has revealed all these wonderful facts in the UK. Britain's Energy Saving Trust, the EST, said that the consumer electronics would overtake kitchen appliances and lighting as the biggest single drain on domestic power. So I think we've got to be wary of this, and I even think I saw a report on one of those tabloid 7 o'clock news programs on one of the commercial stations recently about just how much electricity these things consume. And yes, if you're like our house, where the kids just like turning their telly on and leaving it on, or it's on for quite a considerable amount of time, boy, can it suck down the juice out of the old electricity grid. So
a few weeks or months back, there's a TV program on the ABC in Australia here called The New Inventors.
Yes.
And there was a new invention. Graham's nodding his head.
Yes.
Who was the host of that show? Trick question.
Yeah,
he hosted the Google convention.
He's
a funny man.
Comedian, like, yeah.
Yeah. They had a new invention.
I'll look it up.
Surprisingly enough. Yes, look it up. Quick, Google. And it was like a power board device with a remote switch.
James O'Neill.
Yeah. James O'Neill, of course. And you could plug all of your devices, like your stereo, your television, your surround sound amp, and your VCR, and your DVD, and everything else, all into the one power board strip. And as you walked out of the room, you just hit one switch.
Yeah, and it had a remote switch. What it was a like a piggyback plug. So you plug it, the plug goes into the power point, and your power pack goes into the back of the piggyback plug.
Yeah.
And then there was a lead came out to a switch that you could put on the side of the equipment where it was nice and accessible, because your power point's down the back and your power board's down the back.
Good idea.
And it brings a switch out where it's accessible, so you can switch it all off.
Because, as you said, Andrew, you don't need necessarily power to your TV when you're not at home. And
that's right.
No, it's good. And even we have a habit, when I say we, the Royal We, have a habit of, the computers, when they're in standby mode, even if you've got them all off and monitors off, well, they're actually sort of on still because...
Yep, there is a 5 volts always on the computer, yeah.
And another habit we've come to in our place is leaning down and flicking the big switch on the wall there when you walk away from the computer, which depowers the plug board, as you were saying, so...
Graham and I did a science experiment a few years ago. Graham's going to look at me horrified now. He hasn't got a clue what I'm talking
about. No.
Did it involve a mobile phone and a fridge?
No.
No,
it
good.
It was better. It involved a completely empty house.
Do tell.
Yes.
We had a house, didn't we? And it was completely empty.
We emptied it.
We emptied it. There was nothing in it. When I say nothing, there was absolutely nothing in this house. It was a 3-bedroom brick veneer house.
Yes.
And is this one of your spares?
One of the spare houses, which we just allocated for
the
science
experiment.
From
the Dr. Ron Empire, that's why you're a doctor, because you have spare houses.
That's right, the Dr. Ron Empire. When we looked in the meter box, and the meter was moving ever so slowly.
That's right.
And there was no lights on inside.
Leakage.
I suspected at the time, that there was a doorbell, an electronic doorbell.
Yeah, that's what we worked out. It must have been, because, yes, there
could
was
have
a
been the neighbours nicking electricity. That's big at the moment, especially for those people that are into horticulture.
No, I don't think it was electricity
there. I don't think so. No, there was a doorbell with a hidden plug pack in the ceiling is what we think it must have been.
That's right, that's right. We think that that's what was causing the ever-so-slow drain
on
the electricity.
We thought that must have been such a small
But it was residual. Perceptible. You could see it,
You could see it moving, yeah.
Mm. And we were walking through the house going, what's plugged in? What's turned on?
There was no fridge. There was no nothing. There was nothing nothing plugged in anywhere.
Mm. It was strange, wasn't it?
It was a bit of a
Twilight Zone moment.
Had us really confused for a little while.
But it's amazing. It doesn't take much for all those little things to add up. You've got half a dozen plug packs.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Mm.
The plug packs themselves, so when they're just sitting there plugged into the wall with no device plugged into them, theoretically I would think that they wouldn't draw any power. But
that's not true. Yes, they do draw a small amount of power even when there's no output.
Okay.
Because they're not 100% efficient.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And you can feel them getting warm. They're warm even though there's nothing plugged into them.
So there you go. Always turn your plug pack off.
Plug packs, computers, televisions. The only thing is be careful. Don't switch off those things that have got clocks in that you actually need. It might not matter if your microwave clock flashes 12, but you don't want to turn off your PVR or your video recorder because then you'll miss recording home and away.
Have you heard the expression 12 o'clock flasher?
Yes.
Somebody who...
I know people like that.
Somebody who's clueless, who can't set a clock on a microwave, you walk into the house and everything's flashing 12 o'clock. Do you know people like that?
But it might be intentional. It might be because they're switching it off at night to save power.
Maybe. Maybe it means an environmentally conscious person.
Yeah. But
do you contribute to green power, any of you guys? You know, in your electricity bill? Do you pay the exorbitant cost that goes back into green power?
Afraid not.
No.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think this is another thing we should touch on one day on the show fairly shortly, about what exactly you get for your buck if you actually contribute to those sort of things. So... All right. Can we talk about broadband?
We should.
It's one of our favourite topics.
We should, yes.
Now, let's kick off top broadband ISPs deny peer-to-peer file sharing. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with what peer-to-peer file sharing is, it really is the where everyone pops things onto their own machines, computers in their houses and businesses and offices, and let other people come in and download it. It's friendly sharing thing to do. Like all good things that you share, there are sort of certain nasty things that are, you've got to be aware of. You need to have all your appropriate filtering there because you just never know what it is that you're downloading. But nonetheless, people use this peer-to-peer network on quite a regular basis. To the extent that the internet service providers are going, hang on a sec, because we've never had this problem before, there's a lot of bandwidth flowing in both directions. So as a result, even last week, yesterday, in fact, Optus decided to start metering their uploads, like Telstra does, like Dodo does, but they're the only guys that do. So now Optus, which is the second largest telco in this country, has joined forces with the largest telco in the country, and they're going to start charging for sending bits and pieces up the coax or up the DSL line, which, I don't know, is this going to be a trend? I hope not, because I hope everybody else doesn't start doing that. But this is the times we live in. We have high-speed broadband. We have a need to want to send videos to our friends, and mailboxes are getting bigger to store these things, and Gmail and the likes. Yep. Is this where we're going to go, boys?
I hope it's not where we're going to go. This is really sad, actually. Where the rest of the world is screaming out for faster and cheaper internet access, you get big players like Optus come along and say, no, we're going to penalise you for using our service
Let's make it more expensive.
Let's make it slower. And
you can actually see their plans online.
Make it more complex and everything else and just generally upset people. There's no need to do this, but I can see that the way that the Optus HFC network or their coaxial network is designed, it's not really designed for lots of upstream traffic. And they've always been very anti you running servers
at home.
Well,
that's what the ADSL stands for, the A in ADSL, asynchronous, which is one's faster. The download's faster than the upload.
But the cable network as well, it's not designed to handle an inordinate amount of upstream traffic.
What they call back channel.
Back channel traffic, yeah, that's right, yeah. Graham. So I can see why, from a network design point of view, that they're wanting to discourage people. Mm. But
this highlights the nearsightedness
of
people rolling out this type of technology.
Because they shouldn't be trying to discourage it. They should be trying to encourage users to come on board and to use the technology.
And even if you look at what the government's trying to do at the moment with fibre to the node and all those sort of things, we need the headroom for this type of traffic to happen. Because let's face it, as we all get tech savvy and we use video cameras in our mobile phones and we have Well, even you, Graham, came in tonight. The snappy camera that you've brought in is a 7-megapixel camera. Compare that to a couple of years ago, which was maybe 2 megapixels.
Yep.
There's a lot more data that needs to be emailed around if you don't size
it
down. That's
right. This produces 3 and 4 megabyte files for its JPEG images.
Yeah.
So.
And we're looking at television, which is going from standard definition to high definition.
Yep.
You know, even just by their nature, they are going to use more bandwidth if you want to email that sort of stuff around.
That's
but
right.
Yet, these guys are sort of saying, well, hang on a minute, you want to start doing that? And maybe so. Maybe it's a viable model for them because up until now they've never had that problem. You know, everything's been so small it's been insignificant. People download rather than upload. Mm. But
it should be moving in the direction of charging less for data and charging more for the speed of the connect. Because what's the point of having a really fast connection if you're going to use your monthly allowance in 5 minutes?
Exactly.
There's just no point having it.
Yeah. So if you want to read more about it, visit whirlpool.net.au, which is Broadband Choice. And I think it's a third news item down there at the moment by Phil Sweeney. And there's links through to the Optus website, so you can now see the new home, phone and broadband cap for the Optus Fusion product, which I just happen to have a rate card here for. You're looking at $69 for 2 gigabytes and $89 for about 7 gigabytes. Well, let me tell you, if you're interested in that type of bandwidth, there are better places to go and put your money.
Yes, I was about to say, the moral of the story is shop around. Use Broadband Choice to find out what your choices are.
I think part of Phil's article there says, most ISPs do not count upload data, as it typically doesn't cost them anything. This is because ISPs purchase bandwidth pipes that are capable of the same speed in both directions. Traditionally, download usage always exceeds upload usage, making upload usage
traditionally
irrelevant to the buying equation. But recent trends could change the situation, he says.
Now, this leads us on to the next item, which is ISPs are scrambling to tackle choking of our broadband networks. Now, have any of you guys tried to download anything from the United States or even outside of Australia of recent times and compared the download speed to what you get from within Australia?
I haven't done comparisons. No, usually, though, if you download something from an Australian mirror, as we call it, it's usually very, very fast if it's local.
Anyone with an ADSL2 connection will probably be a testament to this, that the fastest I've ever got out of the United States is around about 300 kilobits per second. On a fairly high-speed broadband connection. Now, the fastest I've got out of Australia, like off RNET, which is the university network, is around about 1.5 megabits per second, which means you can download a 10 meg file in about 10 seconds. It's absolutely terrific off that sort of...
That's a big difference.
It is a huge difference, but everything outside of Australia has always been throttled to a very...
Yep.
Well, it's not so much unusable. It's still quite usable bandwidth, but it just doesn't let you bring in the big streams like you get here locally.
Yeah, because it's a limited resource, that big connection to the overseas networks.
Anyway, there's a consortium, like Optus's G9 consortium. There is now a consortium of ISPs which are trying to push to have funding made available so that we can get bigger pipes and bigger bandwidth in from overseas. Now, everyone's going, oh, yeah, but what for? You're only probably downloading movies and things like that. Well, yes, that's right. That's where a lot of our media source will start coming from, either legally or illegally. But we need to be able to have the bandwidth so that anyone in this country, can tune into any particular media source, whether it be Reuters, the BBC, the New York Times, or whatever.
We might want to load up Juiced, and we might want to watch video streaming or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we've got this little net choke problem, which, once again, up until recently hasn't been a problem, because we've been the land of 1.5 megabit per second DSL, and that's all we ever had.
I think it has been a problem at different times in the past, and then the pipes catch up, and they're big enough, and then someone says, oh, no, we've got enough bandwidth now to run ADSL, everyone to run ADSL, and now here's ADSL 2, we'll make it faster, and now we're choking up again.
Mm.
So I think it's one of those things that comes in cycles.
Yes. No, you're probably right. But we'll see what happens, because it will become a fairly big issue, I think, in the next in the foreseeable future,
yes,
until we get to the next level. And watch this space for fibre to the node. I'm expecting an announcement any day on that, aren't you?
Indeed.
Yes. I haven't heard anything from Senator Coon. In fact, my email's been quite quiet of late from her.
You haven't had any emails from her office?
Maybe she's on holidays or something. There is an election coming up.
If you do nothing else, shop around. If you're looking at upgrading your ADSL or your internet, then just go to Whirlpool or one of those sorts of forum sites and just compare apples with apples, see what's out there.
Now, just briefly, let's talk about Xbox and Xbox repairs.
Oh,
Microsoft
yeah.
got a bit of a problem, a bit
They've
of a dilemma
gone
here.
Into damage control.
You know how there's the
they?
Blue screen of death? on a PC.
There's the red circle of that.
The one.
Red pain or something.
The red circle of pain on your Xbox 360. People go being cringing and crying in their corners and wanting money back from a large software, now hardware manufacturer.
So, to explain, on the front of an Xbox, there's a circle of lights. There's four little lights arranged in a circle. And if three of those four, all of them except the top right one, are red, that's the red ring of death, and that means that your Xbox
the red ring of death.
Some sort of hardware failure.
is experiencing a hardware failure and it's going to have to go back.
But normally you have four green lights, I think. Is that right? When that's
something like that.
You can't do the old turn it off and wait 5 minutes. The Microsoft.
Well, you can, and there's
that's how Microsoft approach things. Just shut it down, go and have a coffee, come back and turn it on. And work okay.
Well, in fact, with the Xbox, a lot of its problems are heat related, so sometimes with the Xbox that will work. And I think particularly if it's the bottom left light comes on, I think is the heat-related one. There's websites that explain what lights mean what.
See, this is the thing with manufacturers pushing technology to the nth degree, because obviously it's a processor or something running fairly hot. Now, Mac had the same problems with their notebooks, which is the reason why they changed to Intel.
Not enough heat sinking.
Yeah, they couldn't disperse the heat, and it just got to meltdown stage, literally, and then things started to go...
And it can be impacted, like if you've got your Xbox tucked very neatly into a shelf in your... home entertainment system, it might not have enough air moving around it to be able to cool itself, and that can contribute to the problem as well. Whereas if you put it out in the open on top of your cabinet, then it might work a whole lot better.
Is that the gist of it from you, Dr. Wright?
I believe so, based on the news reports that I've read. Yeah, I think Graham's got a very valid point with ventilation as well. That sort of problem would manifest itself in a PC just by a blue screen.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that the Xboxes don't have inherent problems even if they are properly ventilated, because they do. But that can make things even worse. Yeah.
Even laptops of today, whether they be Mac or PC, actually still have heat issues. And there's a lot of those great little stands which you can put your device on to actually
get
a bit of ventilation
flow
underneath them, which is a very good idea,
and
I think.
Don't sit your notebook on the carpet or on the bedspread to use it, because it blocks
that's
up
my
the ventilation holes.
Yes, well.
It's got to be able to suck air in through the bottom.
Dr. Ron, you bought a PVR last week for your father-in-law, did you not?
I did. No news. Tomorrow night. Tomorrow night's the big installation night.
Is it?
Yeah, yep. With much fanfare and I'm getting chicken rissoles.
Chicken rissoles,
yeah,
are you?
In exchange for installing a PVR.
Well, hopefully he's not listening tonight. Sorry, Graham.
Sorry, I just wanted to go back and mention one more thing about the Xbox before you move on, which I realise is too late. But one of the things Microsoft announced...
We'll fix it in post-production.
One of the things Microsoft announced is that they're extending the warranty.
Yes, they are.
So
an extra year.
Up to 3 years, I heard.
Ooh.
Yeah, I heard up to 3 years. And they've budgeted like over $1 billion to fix all these problems.
Sorry.
That's all right. Yes, PVRs.
Chicken rissoles.
Yes, I hope your father-in-law's not listening to this, but absolutely every PVR in Australia is now obsolete. Did you know that?
This is to do with the new electronic program guide.
That's right.
What's just happened in the last week?
The digital TV uptake looks set to rise because the free-to-air guys have decided to finally give the electronic program guide, make it available to all and sundry. The service will enable consumers to automate recordings of TV shows on all free-to-air networks using digital recording platforms and make it easier for people to watch shows when it suits them. 9 and 10, as well as regional players like Prime and Wynn, have backed 7's TiVo digital video recording platform, which also will have access to the electronic program guide. If you're a Foxtel user, bad luck. See, there's a thing with Foxtel that you can't get... Remember the early analog Foxtel? You used to be able to get all the free-to-airs down the Foxtel
cable.
Right.
That's right.
Well, when they went digital, Channel 7 and Channel 10 pulled out of Foxtel because Foxtel is run by the Nine Network. So, it's just that lovely friendly rivalry. And this is no different. This is the basic reason behind why Foxtel would not have access to the electronic program guide. So all those people with IQs... unfortunately, you miss out. And it's the same with everyone else with PVRs. But there's more...
On the Foxtel network, you can see Channel 7 and Channel 10, but you're getting the analog being retransmitted. You're not getting the digital with all the digital features on it.
That is appalling.
It is. I really agree.
It is just the most untechnological way of doing something, isn't it? It's bizarre. It's like the Foxtel people saying, well, we'll stick a TV antenna up on our studios.
That's
and
exactly...
Pull it off air and then funnel it into our network. Yeah, good on you.
Adam Turner has his 5 cents worth to chip into this as well. Hey, Adam's been a bit crooked late and his voice is a bit croaky, so please excuse him on this report.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Australia's recalcitrant free-to-air television networks have finally conceded to sharing their programming schedules electronically, but it's not the win for consumers that some people might think it is. Free TV Australia, the industry body that represents the commercial broadcasters, has agreed to make programming schedules available to providers of digital set-top boxes, personal video recorders and other such equipment. The announcement sounds like great news for the majority of people who don't have an internet-enabled PVR. If you do have an internet-enabled PVR, such as those from Topfield and BeyondWiz or a Media Centre PC, you can download an online EPG from sites such as icetv.com.au. But the Nine Network is currently dragging ICETV through the courts, claiming breach of copyright over the TV schedule. Most set-top boxes and hard drive recorders you buy at the likes of Harvey Norman are perfectly capable of accepting in a 14-day electronic program guide, but they don't have internet access. They receive the programming data embedded in the broadcast signal. Australia's television networks already use this feature, but it only tells you what's on now and what's on next, and even this is usually wrong. When I first heard the news from Free TV Australia, I assumed that the networks didn't want to use this over-the-air feature because they want to charge people for the EPG data, which means finding an alternative delivery method. To be sure, I rang Free TV Australia's chief executive, Julie Flynn, to check. I was wrong. Flynn assures me the commercial networks are prepared to give this data away for free as part of the television broadcast. Fantastic! A free EPG for everyone, right? Wrong. When you read the fine print, the EPG data will only be made available to devices with built-in security features to stop people copying the programming information. What exactly does this mean? Free TV Australia's Julie Flynn couldn't tell me exactly which technology would be required, but it's clear that some kind of technology will be required, and that's where the problem lies. Flynn conceded that the set-top boxes and PVRs people already own are very unlikely to meet such requirements, even though they're already perfectly capable of handling an EPG. This new system will require manufacturers to alter their devices for the Australian market. She couldn't point to any overseas deployments of the technology, so it looks like once again we're going it on our own, expecting the global consumer electronic giants to customise their equipment just for the tiny Australian market. So if you've already spent hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on a digital video recorder, stiff. Australia's television networks insist you buy a new recorder that's compatible with their unique protection system to stop people stealing their precious EPG data, even though they're giving the data away for free. The protection system also gives the networks the power to dictate which services don't get the EPG data, letting them lock out the likes of ICETV if they choose. The stupid thing is, this protection system will be quickly broken anyway by people who want to use the EPG data with devices that don't have the blessing of the networks. All the protection system does is punish innocent consumers, just like every other form of copyright protection. In the long run, Free TV Australia's announcement is sort of a win for consumers, but it's also a big blow to the hip pocket, thanks to paranoid television networks who insist on ridiculous safeguards to protect data they're happily giving away anyway, just so they can screw the other EPG providers. As usual, the needs of the consumer come last.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, we're all a bit croaky at the moment. Adam was a bit croaky just there. He's spent a week, and I must admit, I'm still getting over mine. But you guys have been good. Maybe it's this side of the panel or something like that. I don't know. But
yeah, we'll stay over here if that's right.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome to it. Now, let's continue our discussion about PVRs and television.
Yeah.
Adam's just sent an email saying, "Freaky, I'm installing my dad's PVR tomorrow night too." So there must be something in the air about installing PVRs tomorrow night. You guys are in sync. That's very freaky.
So you're getting chicken rissoles?
I don't know. We'll see what happens in the next email, I guess.
Okay, sounds good. Now, we'll give you a full report next week. Let you know how it goes.
Oh, good. Fairfax Media has positioned itself as a leading contender for one of the government's two new broadcasting licenses, Channel A and B, after this week's announcement of its $520 million purchase of Southern Cross radio stations and production house Southern Star. So, Fairfax are, I think, the Packers are moving out of Channel 9. Very interesting book, actually. I don't know whether any of you guys have taken interest in Alan Stone's... is it Alan Stone? I can't think of his first name. Who Killed Channel 9? Very interesting book. And, of course, Channel 9's sort of fallen from grace a little bit in respect to ratings. Their news now in Melbourne doesn't
more
even rate a mention
bit, yeah.
in the top 20.
They're not still the one.
Second and sometimes third in a lot of things.
Contentious
now,
so. Issue there, but yes. I just wonder whether Fairfax are sort of ramping up to take their place back in the 7 network, although Fairfax have nothing to do with Channel 7, but nonetheless they're a good competitor, I suspect. So, but you mentioned this recently, Dr. Ron, Channel A and Channel B, I think it was, the new digital TV channels that Senator Coonan sort of...
She made an announcement.
Trying to get everyone interested again.
Yeah, just to fire up the interest, didn't she, about a week or so ago, a couple of weeks ago. So it's new digital channels will be made available as part of the migration of everybody to digital television in Australia.
Yes, and that'll be exciting, won't it? Another television channel, only one. Everyone else gets millions, but we get one or two. So.
Well, it was for an allocation of two, and one was for the terrestrial system, I believe, and another one was for the enhancement of the DVB-H services, which is the services to handheld digital devices, digital television devices.
See. Yeah, to your mobile phone, TV on your mobile phone.
Yeah,
and
your little your iPod TV type things, which will come out in the next few years, all that sort of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm. Maybe even that iPhone thing that we were hearing about.
Maybe, version 2 maybe.
We'll talk about the iPhone later. I think we've got that down on the rundown if we make it. Phone chips, speaking of telephones and watching things on your DVB-H handheld, mentioned this in the opening of the show, that the police in the United Kingdom managed to grab those handheld phones, those little Nokias I think they were, that the terrorists had. And that was because these guys, being the crooks that they were, thought that these would perish in the following fireball that would engulf most of the poor old airport over there in Glasgow or wherever it was. And but unfortunately it didn't, so they've got everyone's phone number off the SIM card.
Oh dear.
And anyone involved in policing would probably consider that to be quite a bonus when it comes to... you know, crooks leaving clues behind. That would have been an absolute doozy. And I wonder if there are any Australian phone numbers in the list.
The bomb failing to blow up would always be a bonus.
It's always
reminds
a bonus,
you of
no where you are.
Reminds me of a very old Irish joke there, but I'm not going to say it in case I offend someone.
No,
but
we
yes,
have
you
listeners
know, the
in Ireland.
Burnt lips, you know.
Yes.
Yes, anyway. So there you go. And that was what prompted me to talk on the opening of the show about all sorts of things technological from mobile phones. Of course,
it is interesting that, yeah, a lot of the stuff they've been following is that it is following the phone connections and the phone calls and who's in whose address book and who made phone calls to who.
There'd be a wealth of forensic information there for the investigators. They'd,
absolutely.
They'd also be able to marry it up with all of the records that the networks kept.
For the phone company and things.
Exactly right, as to where and when calls were made and things like that. So not only could you look at the histories inside the phones themselves, you could use all the information from the networks and compile a pretty accurate picture of what was going on.
Hmm. So don't you think complacency becomes, this is their downfall in a lot of respects, because they probably used their mobiles, whereas back in the good old days before mobiles, I reckon crooks would have used public phones. That would have been untraceable, wouldn't they?
Well,
unless it was Maxwell Smarts.
With his shoe phone.
With his shoe phone, yeah.
But, that's the thing. But there's also these disposable mobile phones that you get in some markets. Yeah, the prepaid ones, you buy them.
Well, that's a valid point, actually. The postpaid ones are a lot different to the prepaid ones, aren't they?
Because but you still have to provide some sort of ID, depending on whereabouts in the world you are. You still have to provide an ID to be able to get a prepaid phone, but depending on how easy it is to work around that system and use a fake driver's license or something.
Oh, yeah, I guess there's plenty of that out there at the moment, too. And you face it here, you go along and you can buy a SIM at the supermarket here for, I think, $2 or something like that. You whack it in your phone. Do you have to validate it, or does it just start working? You can receive incoming calls, I think, on it straight away.
I think you have to validate. The ones that I've used, you have to go to a website and you have to key your information in and validate it that way.
Ah.
But you could put bogus information in.
I've always been postpaid, so
I don't know much
about the prepaid side of stuff, so maybe someone can correct us when it comes to that, but I'm sure that they'll probably want some form of identification somewhere along the line, so very good. Albums to yield to a digital push. Now we're going to talk fairly shortly about downloading things off iTunes and all that sort of stuff, because there's been some fairly interesting, Choice Magazine in particular. We're going to talk about some of the great places to download music in just a moment. But before we get there, let's talk about the old album. An album came out just the other day, which I thought, I'd like to get that. It's Crowded House's one, the new one. They reformed after 14 years. They're back in town. I figured, yes, well, I grew up with them. The album would be good.
So at lunchtime, you walk down to JB
Hi-Fi? The dilemma, I haven't bought it yet. The dilemma is, do I buy the $17.99 version online from iTunes, or do I go down to the street and buy the $23 or $24 version and get the actual compact disc? Remember that thing?
Well, I suppose it depends whether you like that sort of underwater metallic-y sound you get from the MP3s that you download. If you enjoy that sort of nonsense, then you might want to get the download version.
Yes, yes, that's true.
If you like to read the cover notes, you might...
We know your background in audio, Graham. You're showing it here.
I'm afraid I agree with Graham, because everything that I've paid for that I've downloaded on iTunes has been at 128 kilobits per second.
Which is disgraceful.
And it sounds like absolute crap, pardon the language. And if you walk
Excuse me, there's a family problem,
well,
Dr. Rob.
I mean, this is...
You're venting your frustration.
This is the fact of life. This is what it sounds like. And if you go to a record store and you pay a few dollars extra, not only have you got the original disc and it sounds really, really good, you've got all the album art and the information and everything there, you can still rip it, and you can rip it and have it so it's DRM free, and you can put it on iTunes or a music management system on your computer if you want to as well. So I think I'll be paying the few extra bucks.
You've used some acronyms there, Dr. Ron. RIP and DRM.
RIP means that you are digitally extracting the music from the disc and you're creating files on your computer.
Okay, so that's ripping it, and there's plenty of software that does that. I even think the iTunes and all that stuff does the ripping for you as well.
Windows Media Player will do it.
Yeah, and that does a horrible job too. But
I use CDX. CDX is a ripper. So no pun intended there.
It's a ripper of a ripper.
Yeah, there's a ripper of a ripper, that one.
The other acronym I used was DRM, Digital Rights Management, which is this horrific built-in copy protection system that Adam was just talking about in his View from the Couch, and where it's applied to music, it limits or restricts your distribution of the music.
So if you buy the download version of this song, it might have DRM attached, it probably would, and then you'd only be able to use it on that computer, and you might be able to copy it to a couple of your MP3 players. And then if you want to move it to another computer later on because your computer's crashed or something like that, you might have trouble because the DRM says you're not allowed to copy it again.
Speaking of DRM, we probably shouldn't digress too much in it here because we've covered it in previous shows. But yes, EMI is the record company which has decided not to use digital rights management anymore in their music.
Yeah, and they charge a little bit more and you can download it without the restrictions.
And I also believe there's an increase in quality, although I haven't downloaded it to prove it yet. Someone might stand corrected on this, but I think they've increased the 128 kilobits that you speak of to something a lot higher, so you'll be able to download better quality. But having said that, we'll check that one out. Recently, there have been some changes to the DRM restrictions that apply to music bought online. Global music company EMI has reduced it, has announced that it will offer all of its digital rights without DRM.
Good.
What we mentioned. Apple iTunes stores now offer the DRM-free songs, which cost $2.19 per track, and have a higher sound quality because they are encoded at 256 kilobits per second, up from 128 kilobits per second. But still, I haven't downloaded it, so we can't confirm it yet. In contrast with tracks with DRM, they, as you guys have just said, 128 kilobits per second, and they're $1.69. So if you're downloading the $1.69 track, chances are it's DRM'd and low quality, and if you're downloading the better tracks, you'll find that they're a tad more expensive. I think that'll be the telltale sign. So... But if you want to log on to Choice did a fairly interesting comparison about all sorts of things. Now, do you guys use the online sort of... Have you ever bought music online?
Yeah, I have, and I've been bitterly disappointed.
Really?
Yeah. I limit it to a last resort, matter of urgency type situation where I need
you're
to check the music.
A disc buyer, are
Will you think again for things in the EMI catalogue now that they've done this?
Maybe. I'll try them, Graham. I'll give it a try. But
We've mentioned this 256 kilobit per second. I think the best MP3 does is 380-odd kilobits per second. So it's still not all the way there for the best quality audio you can get on an MP3. 384 kilobits per second, I think, is the best that MP3 will do. Now, speaking of usability, iTunes, you guys use iTunes? Have you ever used Telstra's thing, the Big Pond movie thing?
Which I've never used Big Pond. I've bought tracks on iTunes, but I've never used Big Pond. But Choice gave them a bit of a caning.
Oh, yes. Downloading songs was a relatively simple process. They're talking about Big Pond here, with the exception of Big Pond. So everyone else, not a problem. Big Pond, problem. Its download window wasn't easy to use, and they required to download a license to play each song.
What?
Yes. We also had problems being Choice.
Choice, yep.
They also had problems downloading the three chosen songs for the trial. gee whiz, that's a bit you know, slamming. We tried unsuccessfully to download the songs three times, calling Big Pond support on each occasion to work through the problem.
Too hard.
We used the same computer for each attempt. When we were unable to access the tracks with Windows Media Player 10, we upgraded to 11. We also installed the required software updates. Big Pond offered a refund for the problem tracks. Now,
how much time is this taking? How much money is this costing people? It's just too hard. Why? No wonder people aren't doing this. You know,
but it shouldn't be this hard.
You should just click on something and you should get your song and you should be able to play it. For them to have to make telephone calls to tech support and get money refunded, and it's something such, it should be such a simple process, and for them to have to go through these sorts of hurdles, it's bizarre, really is.
The results of the article, which was completed in June 2007, overall rating was the top one, 92 out of 100, 92% for performance was Chaos Music, www.chaos.destramusic.com. They came home with the wind at 92. Actually, I lie. I missed one. Online Music came in at 94. They were the best one, followed by Chaos Music at 92.
Where was iTunes?
iTunes 91.
So, that's not too bad.
Which is not too bad. Most of the prices of the songs were $1.69. There was one down there for $1.20. So there's a lot of manufacturers getting into this these days. You know, we've got, you know, JB Hi-Fi's are starting to do it, and Nine MSN and Harvey Norman. Everyone wants to be a record retailer these days.
It's because there's zero distribution costs. It's a good business model for them. Very easy once it's set up to just make money.
But I'm with you. I reckon if I'm going to buy an album, I'd rather spend an extra couple of bucks and go down there and get the old printed CD slick and add it to the collection, because let's face it, hard drives, you spend good money on downloading MP3 files, and all of a sudden your hard drive will cease to function one day, because that's the nature of hard drives, and it'll be gone. Bet you haven't backed it up.
Mm.
Have you backed up most of your music? Like, I get terabytes of music at home, but that's because I ripped it from the CD so I can play it on iTunes.
Mm.
But hey, I've got the backup. It sits in the cupboard. Is that how you guys run?
That's the way to do it. I've got a lot of stuff that isn't backed up, though. I must have been. It's a bit scary. And I should know better.
As an IT professional, the first thing you walk into a client say is, have you backed up?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. So, online music stores, I think, they've got an interesting role to play in the online world, but there's still room for improvement, I think, is the moral of the technical story.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of business models out there that a lot of the majority of these people that sell music could take a note from. EMI, congratulations. DRM free, because that's what you buy your music at the record shop for. Like DRM was only, 10% of the music market? And it only was introduced thanks to Microsoft and Apple, really, wasn't it, DRM? Because people were downloading and copying it and doing all that. But they do that anyway.
Well, Microsoft go to the extent now, like, with their new Zune media player, where they...
What?
Zune, which is...
What's that?
That's like their... Well, it's iZune or whatever it's called. That introduces...
That's cynicism, everybody.
It is, yes. That's Andrew's cynicism. The Zune introduces digital rights management to tracks which aren't DRM encoded in the first place. Like this podcast, for example, we don't put digital rights protection on our podcast.
We encourage replication
we
and
encourage
distribution
people
of this
to distribute it, because we want people to listen to us. And then you put it on a Zune and suddenly, now you can play it three times, and you can Wi-Fi it to another Zune and they can listen to it twice, and give me a break.
Yes. Now, let's take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to talk about the hottest new gadget in town. Well, not our town, but in the United States in particular.
Oh, I think I know what this might be.
Yes. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
poor Carly,
visiting the relatives,
Charlie,
washing
Charlie
the car.
The panel. on Tech Talk Radio.
Manufacturers are being offered the world's highest capacity optical storage technology to license by leapfrogging 300 gigabyte holographic discs, and are being offered 1 terabyte in a DVD disc. Now, that's not bad. 1 terabyte, there's a lot of movies you could get on that.
Is it in the size of a DVD?
In the size of a DVD, probably like Blu-ray, because what's Blu-ray? 25 gig per layer. 2 layers on one disc, 50 gig. If you use double-sided disc, there's 100 gig. But this is a terabyte. That's a lot.
This is another 10 times that.
Yes, it uses 2 photon recording processors to record bits in three-dimensional inside a disc's recording media coating. So they're getting really snazzy with the way they're writing all this stuff inside. Because when you think about what a CD is, it's just a disc which has got dye and a reflective surface in it. Well, last time I looked, unless the technology's come of age these days and we've got a lot more sophisticated or stuff like that, but the terabyte. Well, it stands to reason, really. How many terabytes can you get in a one of those memory stick keys? None at the moment, but I'm sure it's only a matter of moments away, isn't it? When you think about it, what are we up to? 16 gig in those sticks? And that, you know, you look at Moore's Law.
Yeah, and you think we started out with those little memory
sticks. This time next year, I reckon we'll have a terabyte in a memory stick, won't
we? Yeah, we used to have, like, 8 megabyte memory sticks and things like that, didn't we? And now we've got gigabyte ones.
Graham's awfully quiet over there, but yes.
Sorry, I'm still trying to absorb a terabyte in a CD size.
It's huge, isn't it?
It's a lot.
One scratch, you're going to lose a lot of data, aren't you?
Well, potentially, yeah.
That's the thing, isn't it? The bigger and the more capacity these storage mediums have, the harder you fall if things go wayward.
Well, yes and no. It depends on how you use it. If you format that up so that you've got a terabyte. But you're only a terabyte of raw data, but you're only putting 800 gig of actual data, and the rest is redundant extras, so that you can do error correction and so on. Then maybe it starts to look really good, and you could have a really bad scratch and could still read around it because you've got enough extra data there.
Maybe
could be quite robust.
You could use it in that sort of a way. Or you could pack as much as you want to in it, and then it becomes really finicky. So.
Yes, a terabyte in this, yes. There's a lot going
for it. So what's the application for it? Is it for video or is it for data storage?
It'll be for anything. Yeah. They're just offering the technology which you can record a terabyte. What they end up using it for is anyone's guess at this point in time.
Yeah, awful lot of high-def television.
Well, yes, that's true. That's true.
What's a terabyte? How many gigabytes?
I'm presuming it's 1,000 or 1,024, depending on whether you're counting in twos or tens.
Well, it's big anyway. Big. Let's talk about our favourite topic of the week, the iPhone.
Yay.
There's lots to talk about the iPhone of late. Dr. Ron, the biggest news that came out, which absolutely floored me, and it explains the website of the week's smoke-releasing parts of the iPhone when they opened it up last week.
This is when you get your new iPhone, you jam a screwdriver in the side and the smoke comes out.
That's the one. Yep, that was the website of the week last week. Very humorous. I did have a look
Not
at that.
Not recommended.
But they did make some valid points in that video.
Yes.
They demonstrated the drop test of the resilience of the new iPhone from the pocket of the jean, as in most geeks, boffins and users would probably have it.
Yep.
It survived relatively
you can put
unscraped.
In your pocket with your change and your keys and it won't get too badly scratched.
That's right. In fact, the key test was very impressive, wasn't it? They scratched it with a key and basically couldn't detect anything wrong with it after the scratch test, so that was very good. But the downfall of the general usage test was the top pocket, like you've got a shirt on at the moment there, Graham, with the pocket and the top of the arrangement there. And if you were to...
And I've got a very bruised and battered Nokia phone that gets dropped from that height on a regular basis.
But the moral of the story is it still works, doesn't
it? It does, yes.
And it's, yes, you might have the odd chip. Well, the poor old iPhone didn't quite survive. It had a bit of a crack in the glass on the front.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah. And that was one of the criticisms of the iPhone. That was it looked really good, and it is really good, but it didn't actually stand the rigors of day-to-day usage, which is what the Nokias and the Sony Ericssons that we have. Like, my Sony Ericsson's fallen off the roof of the car. You get a little ding on it, you pick it up, and put the battery back in, and it works.
That's it.
And that's what you need in one of these mobile devices, because let me tell you, the iPhone is a fairly expensive acquisition, in all intents and purposes.
But being small and you use it every day, it's going to have its little adventures. It's going to get dropped at some point or other.
Now, the thing which really sort of made me sort of go, what, when I heard about it, was the battery soldered in. Did you know that?
Yeah, it's an integral part of the iPhone. It's
but
contained inside it.
Well, this is no different to the iPod. The iPod batteries are internal and can't
be removed.
Yeah, but
the iPod batteries might be, but this is a telephone. What mobile phone do you know where you can't change the batteries? Because I religiously, if I travel interstate, I will take a second battery because I can't charge a battery to make calls. And I spend, when you're away from the office, you use your mobile phone more. Because you're not on a landline and people aren't ringing you on a landline, they're all ringing
but you've
you.
Got a, you've got a plug pack that you plug in when you're in, your office and at your desk, and you've got a
yeah. But when I'm at the Google,
a thing that plugs into your car that charges it when you're in your car.
Yeah, but when I'm in Sydney, I don't have that. When I'm at the Google convention, my batteries are going flat by about 3 p.m. I'm going, Dr. Ron, I've got to have to change batteries.
And so that's, do you take a charge battery with you? Do
I
you?
Take a spare charge battery with me when I'm on the on you know.
I don't have
out
a spare
of the
battery for any of my current phones.
Don't you?
I've only got the one battery that came with.
I used to, when I did a lot of travelling for work, used to carry spare charger batteries with me, but I haven't for a few years now. I'm
well, obviously,
same as Graham, I've only got the one in my phone, that's it.
You obviously don't talk as much as I do.
It's
maybe that's my
thing
problem.
To buy. It's, you know, those batteries, they're $80-$90
yeah,
a battery.
Yeah.
Well, yes, in our family, we have the same brand of mobile phone, and as a result, all the batteries are compatible, and
right.
We've upgraded, and as a result, there's about half a dozen batteries, which are still very good floating around the place.
That's handy.
And, yeah, I know there's method to the madness in our place.
Yeah.
If you buy the same brand, the car kits work in the car, so I can jump into a car and put my phone in, or my wife can. And all the phones work in the car kit, avoiding that $100-and-whatever-dollar penalty, which she got done for recently, which is very funny.
Oh, no.
Yes, and it was my fault, apparently. I rang her, and she picked the phone up, and someone
oh,
saw her and
no,
said,
no. No sympathy at all, I'm afraid.
And 3 demerit points.
It was, yes, in Victoria it is.
And
anyway,
the fines have all just gone up.
Have they?
CPI.
Yep. CPI. Oh, yes, that's great about this state, isn't it? Everything gets linked to CPI.
Yeah.
So what's that now, $136.22
no,
or something?
Don't
or?
Quote me. 160-something. I think 163.
Oh, goodness me.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's talk about the iPhone as opposed to the
should.
Other forms of things.
So it's got a battery that's fixed inside it, which we knew about and which the iPods have always had.
Yep, and we can't run them here in Australia because they haven't brought out the 3G version yet. But what's going on in Europe? Dr. Ron, you had something about iPhone and Vodafone is picking
we,
it up
we
in
could,
the UK.
Just to pick up what you said, Andrew, we could use the iPhone in Australia, but it would only work on...
Till January.
Well, that's right.
They've
made an active point of announcing that GSM is going to be turned off in Australia, that the networks have been end-of-life, and we could use the iPhone here. If you brought it here and turned it on, it would work, but only for a short time, only for a number of months or years, a couple of years at the most, wouldn't it?
Well,
3G is where we're all headed.
But a lot of the smarts of the network are required, and this is where AT&T in the United States are providing, you know, all the GPS stuff that we don't get in this country.
Yeah.
So, because that's where that works, the navigator part of it works well. The internet side of stuff, well, why would you want 2G broadband, which is not broadband? What is it? It's about 300 kilobits per second max. Where's Mark when you need him? Whereas you're getting 3.5 megabits per second down, or whatever it is,
on
which
the
equates about
generation.
One. Yeah, on the new stuff.
Mm. A report by a Dutch publication has renewed speculation that Vodafone is the front runner to become Apple's European iPhone partner. According to Bright, which is the publication, sources within Vodafone say the two companies are talking, but the sticking points are that Apple wants a guaranteed minimum volume, while Vodafone wants the freedom to subsidise the purchase price.
Mm. Well, there's rumours that the, that's fairly heavily subsidised in the US, isn't it?
Mm.
Through AT&T. What's the contract? 2 years or something?
It would be a 2-year contract, I think.
Yeah,
off the top of my head.
It's the way everybody works these days. Give the hardware away for as minimal cost as possible to hook people into the new technology and get them with
a
contract.
And lock them onto a plan. Lock them onto a nice big plan. Yep.
Another interesting thing about the iPhone to come out too is the hackers are now starting to get into it as well, because as Mr. Steve Jobs did say when he launched the product, is that it's a fully-fledged Mac running OS X inside that little portable device.
Can you run Linux on it?
Boot camp.
Not yet.
In boot camp.
I haven't heard of them doing that
yet.
You
run Windows CE on instead of OS X.
Yeah. So when you buy your iPhone at the moment, it's locked to the AT&T network, and you can't use any of its functions until you've got your contract up and running with AT&T.
Well, as I said in the news too, the AT&T had a bit of a problem.
Yeah, they've had some problems with the activations, yes.
So there's all these frustrated, I've got it, but I can't use it, people running around in all parts of the
United
States.
I gather, though, is a lot of that comes down to the fact that the person who's got the phone in their hands isn't the same person who actually gets the phone bill. So
how does that work? That idea.
Let's say if you work for a company and you've got the phone, but the phone bill goes to your company's, you know,
oh,
account department.
Yes.
Yeah. so that you can't authorize it, so you can't activate it.
That's awkward. Yes.
So a lot of those come down to that, but there's other problems as well.
Well, let's talk about hackers, shall we? A well-known hacker claims to have overcome restrictions on the Apple's iPhone, allowing highly technical users to bypass AT&T's network to use the phone's internet and music features.
Yes.
DVD John. Now, there's a blast from the past.
Ah.
You remember him?
There he is.
He cracked the CCS. I can't think of the acronym for the protection on DVDs and Blu-rays.
Yep.
He cracked that. DVD John aims his efforts at Apple's new iPhone. In a post dated July the 3rd on his blog, he said that consumer electronics gadgets since he was a teenager is what he's been cracking in Norway, and he's found a way to activate the brand new unactivated iPhone without signing up for AT&T services. Now, that's going to be in demand.
But the big warning here is that it only gives you access to its web browser and its iPod-type features and doesn't allow you to use it as a phone.
Okay, so it becomes a PDA, does it?
Yes.
As opposed to a mobile communications device.
That's right. It becomes a next-generation video iPod thing, but not a phone.
So that's one thing I have a problem with, is when you buy a mobile phone from a carrier and they subsidise a handset, and fair enough for the life of the contract because they can recoup their costs. But what happens at the end of that contract when the phone is theoretically yours and they refuse to unlock it so you can put any SIM into it and use it on any network? How does that work? It doesn't, does it?
You can't. It's locked.
But yeah. You can unlock a phone. I must admit, I've in all credit to Three, one of the providers that I use, we bought a phone recently and they were glad to unlock it even within its contract so that I could use their...
So where, some providers are better than others.
Yeah, where I couldn't use their coverage.
Did they ask you why you wanted to unlock it?
Yeah.
And what did you say?
Well, when I was away on holidays in Christmas time, I was up in the Central Coast of New South Wales where there was no Telstra nor was there any Hutchison's coverage. So as a result, I had no service. But I could see... That was really frustrating. The signal strength meter on my mobile phone was bash, absolutely full scale. There was signal around me, all around me, but nothing that I could use.
Mm.
And as a result, I did have another handset with me, and I found out what the provider was and popped one of the $2 SIMs in from the supermarket, and away we went.
Those prepaid SIMs we were talking about earlier.
That's the one. Mm. So I said, look, I'm out of contract on this. I'm more than happy to keep the... business with you, but in this instance, I would like to be able to put a SIM from another carrier in there so I can use a network where you don't cover it. And they did, which was very good.
That's pretty good, yeah.
So we've spoken about hackers. Let's talk about the sales. 500,000 sales over the weekend. Apple has told... basically, they sold about 525,000 iPhones at Apple and AT&T stores in the first weekend since the launch of the device. That's bigger than the attendance at Harry Potter, I think, on the first day.
Well, over 500,000.
Yep. Now, that's certainly good consumer demand. But you've got to admit, the people who use Macintosh machinery are very brand loyal.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think because it's got the Mac logo on it, it's a must-have for those sort of people. Now, in at our office... we have Macintosh users and we have PC users. And can I just say that the Mac users are exceptionally passionate about their machines, despite the fact that there are some idiosyncrasies which they don't like in respect to some of the programs that they use. They just love them. And, you know, one particular person just makes sure he walks well and truly around them, a PC, when he goes past one rather than walking past it. So I think that's got a lot going for Mac. And in all fairness to them, they do make a very good product.
Oh, that's right. Absolutely. It's not, in a lot of cases, with the Macintosh computers or with things like the iPods or the iPhone, they're not the cheapest device on the market that does that job, but they do it remarkably well in most cases.
Yes. Are you going to get one when they come out? Do you reckon it's for you? I asked you this the other week about TiVos, Dr. Ryan, and you said no, which surprised me.
No, the TiVo itself is not for me. Now, as for whether I would get an iPhone or not...
Is that sort of what you're after in a gadget?
I'll concede that I'd like to have a play with one. I'd like to try it. I'd like to hold it in my hand, and I'd like to give it a bit of a road test.
And drop it and see?
No, I wouldn't go out of my way to drop it, no.
Just to check on
that. But just to use the interface, to use the slide.
Yeah. I'd like to see how it operates and what it feels like to use. But I tell you what I would like to see feature-wise. Obviously, we need third generation. We need HSDPA support.
That's right.
We need Wi-Fi.
Yes.
Must have Wi-Fi in it. We need the camera in it to be able to take video. We need easy access to the battery and the SIM card and things like that. So maybe the second generation.
I don't think you'll get all of those. I don't think you'll ever get one that you can change the battery in.
That's disappointing to me. I really, because as I explained earlier, I think that's a necessity.
Yeah, but maybe it's not for that sort of use.
It's a telephone, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, but different
it's a
people,
telephone.
Different
people take telephone to make telephone calls on battery.
Yeah, but if everybody used their telephones the same way, we'd only need one model of telephone on the market.
Yeah, Apple aren't complaining.
It's interesting you should say that, Graham. One of the reviews that I was reading about the iPhone says, one of the biggest lessons to be learned from the whole iPhone introduction is that you are never going to see a phone, or any other device for that matter, that's ideal for everyone.
That's right.
And the absence of a feature that you consider essential doesn't mean that it's useless for everyone else.
Reminds me of Monty Python a bit. We're all individuals. I'm not.
Yes. We're all individuals.
Now, speaking of individuals, when we return, we're going to talk about an individual who had a bit of a win over the big G, the big Google, when we return.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
A German chap actually had a bit of a win against the big G, the big Google, during the course of the week.
With Gmail, yeah.
Apparently we talked about this in the news in the opening of the show tonight, which I thought was pretty good for someone who's been working on another product called G something or other, maybe G for German Mail or something like that. I don't know. But to be able to stand up in front of a monolith, whatever, a huge company like Google and win, I think is a credit to anybody. So he must have been well and truly down the
So
down
he
the
had track a, on he it. Had another product called Gmail, and he won the rights to keep the name, did he?
He did. And he's sort of at the moment copping a lot of flack from litigious parties in other countries trying to say, no, you can't do that. But as a result, Google may not run Gmail in Germany. I think they'll take their bat and ball and go home. They'll run it
by a different name, or they just won't run it at all.
I don't know. Maybe they'll call it GGmail or something like that, just to give everyone the absolute heebie-jeebies. But I don't know. But it's an interesting thing, because it just goes to show that a worldwide patent, or I assume they had it patented, doesn't really stick if someone actually got there before you. So
it shows you the value of a domain name, too.
Yes, absolutely. It's
well, there's been a few others. Like Firefox had an interesting domain name. Someone else had it, and then they got it off. The user sold it to or gave to Firefox, didn't they?
Okay.
So it's not the first time, but yes, and there's been a bit of a rush as we've been discussing about the
People registering iPhone-related domains. Yeah,
have you got one yet?
No.
We should have TTR iPhone. Oh, God.
You didn't register iFlop after last
week. No. Well, you should have. Yes, I remember that was in the teaser. That was very good. So, yes, here's to everyone who wants to, stick in there and, believe in what he... Obviously, this guy was passionate about what he believed in and kept... obviously, had deep pockets, too. He must have had some good financial or family backers, which had a lot of spondul, because it wouldn't have been a cheap process taking on one of the organisations like Google would imagine. Anyway. Okay, when we come back, the website, gadget, and odd spot as we conclude Tech Talk Radio for this week.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of my own!
This week's gadget is the Western Digital WD MyBook World Edition Remote Access Device.
What's one of them?
You may very well ask, Graham. This is a network-attached storage device.
Oh, it's a hard disk with a network socket on it.
Correct.
Very good.
That's pretty much all it is. It's a hard disk, and it connects to your local network, either by plugging into the Ethernet
port. Wirelessly, or...?
Or wirelessly.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a 750-gigabyte disk with an Ethernet port on the back. How cool is that? 750 gigs, that's huge.
Does it do toast? Adam's hanging out for a toaster with Ethernet.
Well, maybe he's approaching it from the wrong angle. Maybe he
750 gigabytes in a tiny box, yeah, it might do your toast.
It'd be pretty warm, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It comes with some clever software called WD Anywhere Access, and it's essentially like a web server. The storage system and all the files on it are always accessible when you need them, even when your local computer is turned off.
That's handy. That's very handy.
Yeah.
So it serves a user interface so you can navigate through the file system on the hard disk from anywhere that's got access to that network.
That'd be really good to extend the range of your BeyondWiz or something like that.
Anything.
Where they connect wirelessly. You can whack all your MP3s onto that and just talk to it.
You could share MP3s, photos, video.
It's got plenty of room on there to put all your movies and TV shows and all that sort of stuff on too. So indeed. I've used devices like this in the past. That sounds like a really nice one.
Yeah,
how much?
The digital products are good. It does say $350 Australian. You can buy these online with free shipping. If you want more information, go to westerndigital.com.au.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
And the Tech Talk Radio website of the week this week by general consensus in the studio this evening is Flock. www.flock.com to be precise.
Thanks TARDIS3 for your feedback at the top end of the show, and we thought we'd make it a website.
Yes, Flock is a social web browser which is written... with open source code in mind, that is like from Firefox and all that, as Graham was saying off air before. And Flock is an amazing new web browser, this is what it says on their webpage, that makes it easier to share media and connect to other people online. Share photos, automatically stay up to date with new content from your favourite site, and search the web with the most advanced search toolbar available today. That's a big call, but you can go and download Flock and try it from yourself from their website, which is all the W's, .flock.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
It's tax time, Andrew.
Oh, I was getting nervous there for a minute. I thought, what time?
Tax time. It's tax time. Have you got your business tax done, personal tax done?
No, but I should ask you that. You're normally about 2 years delayed.
No,
don't you? In fact, I've actually quite well. I've got to do my BAS yet, but I've done my group certificates and I've done payment summaries, they call them now.
For our international listeners, BAS is the business tax return.
Business activity statement. We have to give the government some money each, and we collect money for them every quarter, and we give it to the government.
That's the one. This is a historical odd spot. It was around this time 2 years ago when it was announced that almost 1 million taxpayer records were accidentally deleted from UK Inland Revenue computer
damn,
systems.
Damn, I thought you were about to say Australian systems.
No, unfortunately it wasn't Australian systems. The department took 3 years to discover that software used to cleanse its database of old cases was also wiping live ones from its system.
Well, they were using F-disk, were they?
I think so. This resulted in some 364,000 people who cannot be identified being owed £82 million.
Do they know who they are, though?
That's the main question. I don't know. While another 22,000 did not pay tax due of around £6 million.
Well, there's a good example of technology going wrong, really, isn't it?
Going awry, yes.
Yes. I wonder if our tax office have heard of this software. Maybe we should send them, you know, a sample disk or something like that for them.
I hope not. I hope the UK's on track for this year. But that's the odd spot for this week.
And that is Tech Talk Radio for this week. Thank you all for your company, where you might be listening to us, in the train, in the car, in the plane, to coin a...
Mowing the lawn on a train, or in a car on a plane.
Pressing. We'll get that promo into circulation next week, so you can hear it all again.
Very good.
You've been listening to Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan and myself, Andrew McComb. Next week, we have a photographer coming into the studio.
Oh,
Michelle
terrific.
Lawrence is going to talk all about how digital photography has revolutionised his industry.
Is he going to tell us about RAW files, which we're talking about last week?
Excellent. He is, and your EXIF files and all that sort of stuff.
Great.
If you're interested in photography and the digital revolution that's happened in recent times, next week is a must listen for you all. Until then, it's bye for now.
It's
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panelists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.